Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. This is the South Bay Show, Manhattan Beach 360, on March 23rd, 2018. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that.
The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce. The Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce has been serving the city of Manhattan Beach for over 60 years, and they are dedicated to promoting a strong local economy by supporting the community, providing valuable business connections, and representing business with government. The Chamber staff is focused on providing its membership with the tools and resources to help businesses grow and thrive within the community. Their goal is to continually support the individual efforts of business as they work to support the growth of the local economy. For more information on how the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce is working with member businesses and the City of Manhattan Beach to support that growth, visit the website at manhattanbeachchamber.com or call 310-545-5313.
I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose, that's what we talk about here on The South Bay Show. And, of course, I'm not alone because of our great partnership with South Bay by Jackie.com and executive producer of The South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Also joining us today as co-host and co-interviewer is the president and CEO of the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce, Mr. Mark Lips. Jackie, Mark, how are you guys doing today?
I'm doing much better, well, thank you.
Yes, you are. Oh, my God. I was here all by myself yesterday.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yes, yes, Jackie.
Well, you know, I'm trying to head out to Mammoth, and, you know, best laid plans. I was going to be on the road taking this call, but as you know, I took the world's quickest shower.
Yeah.
So,
Mammoth?
I do have
Going to Mammoth?
Yeah. Yep. Yes.
Okay.
With my bride.
I should just tell you, my husband's been up there since Tuesday, and he's getting all the freshies today.
Oh, my gosh. I'm telling you, it's been one wave after another up there.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. It's good. And, of course, just a quick recap, and this always happens when my husband goes out of town, and I take a header down the stairs. It happens every time he goes out of town.
Oh, my.
Yeah, yeah. So I was
I think you got to stop wearing the high heels.
Well, you know, unfortunately, you know, here's the funny thing.
In your
I was barefoot. You got to stop wearing
the high heels in your PJs.
I was barefoot, and I wasn't drinking. All right. I mean, there was no alcohol involved. Here. I'm a walking public service announcement. Don't look at your phone while you're walking downstairs. But the good news is, I went to the urgent care very early yesterday morning, and they took x-rays, no broken bones, tendons, bruising, ligaments, that sort of thing. So I got to be horizontal with my foot elevated for, all day yesterday and today, she said 2 days. But I'm feeling better already, so it's great. It's great. And I have to thank my neighbor, Susan, who came over and helped me out. And I have to thank my friend, Kimmy, who came over and took me to the urgent care yesterday and helped me out. So, and then my friends came in from Chicago last night. So
yeah,
they're staying with me. So.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Us husbands are never around when you need us.
Well, he called me yesterday and he said, should I come home? And I said, absolutely not.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Well, listen. I don't know if you've noticed, but the homeless issue is just really taken off. I have probably had, and I don't know what that's got to do with Jackie's ailment, but I just thought it was interesting that, I mean, it has become a huge initiative now, and it's gotten down to the local level now, you know, to the city level. I mean, where I've had probably three meetings, beginning at the county level, and then the regional level, and then the city level. And, of course, it's, you know, L.A. County's one of the trying to be a leader in this, as well as up in San Francisco, because it's just such a and they're getting ready to come out with the latest report, you know, the past report. And I think, Jackie, you and I have talked about this previously.
Yeah.
We were at north of 57,000 homeless. And I think 56,000 of those are in Redondo. But
yeah, right.
In Santa Monica. But they're coming out with the new report, the latest numbers, and they expect those to be up by 10% or so. So
really?
I mean, to be up dramatically. And so on the city side, which is interesting, we're all trying to figure out, okay, what are the solutions? And everybody has different opinions. And on the city side, we had a meeting. We've had two meetings at the city in the last couple of weeks, one for businesses and one for residents. And, you know, in Manhattan Beach, and you're gonna laugh at this, but we've documented six homeless.
Right.
But they say it's probably closer to 20. So there are residents, and we have one mental health care worker who comes in on Friday to travel with the police, and, you know, it just isn't enough manpower to handle it. Because people say, and people are saying, well, six people, can't you put your arms around that and just get to know those six people and get them help? And then I have another meeting on Monday with the South Bay Coalition for the Homeless. I mean, it's really, because here we've got, 300, because of Measure H, we have $355 million we need to spend in the county, right, that we've raised.
Mm-hmm.
And but the money's just sitting there because everybody's, with the exception of trying to build some homeless shelters, and they've increased a few street teams out there, but they're trying to figure out what's the best way to spend this money. So that's why all of a sudden, I didn't realize, it was all of a sudden, all these meetings, I'm going, what's going on? Well, they have this pot of money, and they're trying to figure out, okay, we don't have enough money to make mistakes. Whatever we do has got to be, we got to be all in, you know? And
yeah.
And it's interesting.
Yeah.
And in the city meetings, it's interesting when you talk to them because our downtown is where it's really impacted and our retailers are really feeling it. And we're human beings. And so generally what we're doing is enabling them because we're letting them come into our businesses and we're feeding them. And in some cases we're giving them vouchers to go to Starbucks and get coffee or get a haircut or, you know, things like that. And, you know, so we're perpetuating and not really fixing their issues. And it could be that they're off their meds. They need to take their meds. It could be that they're out of work and need to be retrained. You know, it could be they just need housing, and there are places they can go where they can get this help. And unfortunately, and this is one of my comments, was nobody knows those resources. You know, we'll get a flyer in our utility statement promoting the art walk on the north end, but what about a flyer that says, here are the numbers to call if a guy is flailing his arms out in the middle of the street? I mean, other than just calling 911 and the cops, you know, the cops have one way of dealing with things unless they have that mental health person with them, Mary, and she's only there on Fridays. But other than that, and so the cops have one way of dealing with it, and that's not really the best way to deal with it. And that's law enforcement versus, you know, finding help. And so, you know, we need to get that message out to the other places to call for these individuals and see if we can't, even if you got one out of 10 in a place where they're living and able to maybe get back on their feet and be retrained, but they got to get there, you know. They got to get out from underneath that bridge or out you know, walk, you know, out from underneath that tree, and you got to get them to where they need to be. Now, the mental health, that's the real issue.
Yeah.
Mental health.
That's, yeah.
I mean, where it doesn't matter. They'll just be back out on the street. And how do we help those? And some people are saying, well, legislatively, we need to relax our definition of gravely disabled or grave disablement, which is what I guess the definition homeless, mental health, you know, you can't just put them in prison or put them in jail, and they have liberties. So I said, you can't, what I didn't realize too, is you can't just pick them up and go put them in a facility.
Yes. That,
you know,
changed.
They have
that
to,
changed. That changed in the '70s, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. They have, you know, yeah, they have to want to and agree to do it. They're adults. And, you know, so, and a lot of it is determined by that definition. You know, if they are considered gravely disabled, they can be put into a rehab or some kind of institution where we can get them help. But so they said they need to relax that so that they can help these others who could be simply they're just not taking their meds. We need to get them someplace for 30 days or more, because right now it's 72 hours and they're out.
Mm-hmm.
And 72 hours just isn't
wow.
gonna
well,
cure
there's,
anybody.
There's
we should do a show on that.
You know, Mark.
Well, I get them
you
all day. They, you know, South Bay Coalition or the homeless, South Bay COG. Everybody is that's front and center. Janice Hahn's office. That's one of her top priorities. It would be a good show. And the city, all the cities in the South Bay, Redondo especially, has been very aggressive with it. Is their issue, you know. So
let's do a show on it. Let's do a show on it. I agree. That's a
well,
good
idea. We have done a show on it. We had one of those people that does the count every year. We did that show mm-hmm. a couple of years ago where they do the homeless count. But
right,
you know something,
right.
I know that you said, you know, with this measure, we've got all sorts of money, but everybody's just waiting because they want to come up with a solid plan and not
right,
just do things willy nilly. But here's the next part, Mark, where you're going to get a lot of backlash. Nobody wants those facilities in their neighborhood. As a matter of fact, Redondo is on the warpath about low-income housing already. They're
right.
already on the warpath about that. They don't want it
people,
because they're talking about putting low-income, high-density, low-income housing on the transit routes, you know, major transit routes. And Redondo is already fighting that. They don't want
right.
They don't want to build up PCH with apartments. Torrance is some people in Torrance are already saying, sorry, we have enough people here. We don't want any more. So the problem is, you know, it's all well and good that everybody wants to help, and there can be some solutions, but nobody wants it in their backyard, which is, you know, it's a fact of life, you know. But we
well,
can talk about this again.
That was brought up. That was brought up in the meeting, and actually it was brought up late in the meeting because, you know, to your point, people were talking about, oh, can't we find facilities? Can't we, you know, do all of this? And this was Manhattan Beach, 3.6 square miles, where we're pretty dense. There isn't any really usable space here or vacant space that can be utilized. And then you have the not in my backyard.
It's not only not in my backyard, but just say, for instance, just say, for instance, you got that vacant lot on Manhattan Beach Boulevard. What was it? It used to be an Albertsons or something. You know, let's say somebody comes up mm-hmm. with a great plan with a great facility and they build it there. The residents aren't going to want the homeless people lining up to get into that place.
Right.
They're just not going to want it. You know,
right.
they don't
well,
want
we,
it to look like
can't
a Kid Rock.
Force, we can't, yeah, but we can't, for, we don't own that land.
Oh no!
You
know, I know that.
El Torito sells. We can't force someone to put in a homeless
I know
shelter
that.
Or low income housing there. The best we can do.
It was just a for instance. Yeah, it was just
right,
a for
right.
instance.
But part of our yeah right. And but my point is, there's very little space. And you're right. It's not. I was just using you know, NIMBYism is just a way of saying not in my backyard, because people just don't want that. It brings down home values and they're fearful and. And You become a destination. And it's interesting, people started talking about all these ideas. This one guy stood up, and he was very adamant, very forceful, and said, you guys need to rethink all of this, you know. And he was, you know, almost angry. And finally, one of the leaders of the meeting said, by the way, who are you? And he goes, I am a 27-year employee of the Santa Monica Police Force. And he said, I've seen our homeless problem escalate there because of our initiatives to provide low-income housing. We ended up becoming a destination, and now we have a real issue. Now, if you talk to – and then so the next day I was meeting with the people, two people who actually used to work in Santa Monica on that issue, and they said, no, it's just natural evolution, and just like everybody else, their increases have happened just like all other places in the city. But nevertheless, the point was made, it has to be thought out, really thought out. And one of the big – and so they're saying we need to create centers, pockets. Places where these people can go, facilities, not necessarily in Manhattan Beach, but, you know, somewhere, centrally located where we can do it, you know. One of the things that came out of the discussion was we do not, and it's funny, some people who are in this business will argue that because they said we've increased our number of outreach, but most people were saying we do not have enough street teams out there. And a street team consists of a nurse, a medical assistant, and sometimes a police officer or just another assistant, you know. And they get them food, but then they also interview them. They try to embrace them and find out where they are, who they are, where they're from. Do they have any family nearby, friends, you know. And even if they find out, for instance, they really get to know someone and they find out they have family in Tennessee, they'll pay to get that person to Tennessee, you know, back to their family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that we just need. They're saying we need more street teams. We need more outreach. I said and one of my things is, well, easy, low-hanging fruit, like I said before, is let's just get the information out to all of our local retailers and our residents that, numbers to call other than just 911 and the police, you know.
Mark, we're going to have to move. Mark, we're going to have to move on now. But today, we're going to have to move on. We will have a show about this.
Well, that's my suggestion, though, for Eric. My suggestion is we take all the unused shared office spaces and turn them into homeless units.
Okay. Let's move on. Let's get to the show. All right.
I mean,
all right.
Welcome to Manhattan Beach.
I really feel like an urban setting that way, you know.
There you go. All right. Okay.
We're getting a little background noise. I'm not sure where it's coming from.
I think that's on Mark's end. But anyway, we're
going
to get right.
Is it on my end?
It might be on your end.
Well, no. We don't know yet.
You hear me? Okay.
All right,
continue on.
All right. Okay. Our guest this morning is Eric Johnson, founder of Ignited. Now, Eric launched Ignited, a marketing company, 18 years ago. He brings a unique client perspective to the agency, having previously held the post of Senior Vice President of Marketing at Activision for 10 years, where he played a critical role in turning the bankrupt company into the largest game publisher in the world. In addition to providing overall leadership and guiding the vision of Ignited, Eric leads the strategic planning and business development efforts. He is also the owner of El Camp, a co-working space, and Box Boulevard, a subscription box company. Eric is currently chairman to the Office of President of Think LA, the trade association that promotes Los Angeles as the new world center for creative thinking and innovation in the fields of advertising, marketing, and media. And so this morning we're going to learn about what services Ignited offers, as well as this new workspace, this new co-working space, El Camp. Welcome to the program, Eric. We're so glad you could join us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me. Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. And it really
pleasure.
Is quite – thank you. It's quite a story, Eric. I mean, the times that you've
seen in the marketing and advertising world, the 10 years where you played a critical role with Activision and gaming in general has been quite a storied experience. Tell us a little bit about what the world was like then for marketing and advertising, and contrast it to today with, I mean, the president is on Twitter every day. This has got to be a different world.
It's been an exciting, an exciting time to be involved in marketing. You know, if you think about it, the original marketing was, Bob Hope shilling for gas stations on television, and we interrupted people's favorite shows by creating commercials and radio spots and print ads, and that worked really well for 50 years. But starting around the mid-90s, when the digital age came on, everything changed. We started interrupting people with banner ads and pop-ups, which hasn't been a whole lot better. And now we're into a whole new age of influencer marketing and reaching people on their phones, and people are actually paying to avoid advertising. And so it's become a very interesting time to be involved in the world of marketing. And it happens to be that L.A. has a unique position because we're also the capital of content creation. The most movies, television shows, video games are originated here, and a good chunk of the commercials that you see on television are produced here by great agencies and produced for companies from around the world who come here to tap into the talent. So we're at kind of a very interesting geographic location in the world of marketing, and we're at a very critical time where everything is changing, and frankly, most consumers would rather have life without advertising. And so it's an interesting challenge for businesses to get their message out to folks when people are actively avoiding those messages they're creating.
Now, in my mind, what this means is that this is either the worst time in advertising and marketing, or it's the best time in advertising and marketing, because something is going to change, and when it changes, whoever figures that out is going to make a boatload of money.
Yeah. So you're right. The global marketing business is about a $500 billion industry, and the U.S. market is about $195 billion. That is the forecast for this year. So it's a huge industry, and the dollars are getting smaller because people are watching less television, or people are producing less commercials. What's happening is that their attention is getting fragmented across lots and lots of different devices, lots and different platforms, and frankly, reaching smaller and smaller audiences. And so by my mind, your point, that you could say, oh my gosh, this is horrible. Like, if your whole life was involved in making expensive commercials, you're in deep trouble. But most people are pivoting. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, he's chuckling.
You're laughing.
I'm laughing. You're right. People are panicking. People are out of their minds panicking because kids are like, most of the people that I met when I was driving for Lyft and Uber, a lot of the kids don't have landlines, have cable, and they're just like on their cell phone all day, every day.
That's right. And the interesting challenge is that there's very limited media options to reach people on their cell phones. It's a small screen. Not a lot of ads can get through to people, and people are paying for ad blockers to avoid the ads showing up on their phones because they don't want it to run up their data charges, and they don't really want to be interrupted. So what it does is, though, it creates a really interesting opportunity for smart organizations to go and say, how do we get in front of people in a less invasive way, in a more appropriate way? And I think it's the beginning of kind of a golden age, which is, we're only going to serve ads to you if it's going to be relevant to you. And frankly, that's what I want in my life. I don't need to see products for women because I'm not a woman. I'm not interested in certain products and categories. I would never buy that product. And so what I'd rather receive is things that I care about, things that might be relevant to my life. And I think you'll end up having less ad load effectively, and it'll be more relevant and interesting to you.
Well,
okay.
That is happening. I mean, that's been happening for years, the targeting, though. I mean, I spent almost 30 years in the TV business, and I remember touring a company in probably
geez, early 2000, they worked mainly with cable systems in New York, and they could literally go house by house and know who was in that house and target the commercial to that home. And,
yeah.
You know, it could be a Caribbean cruise, but the commercial was tailored for one home, 18 to 49, and then the other Caribbean, same product, was tailored to 55 plus, you know, and, you know, but they're getting pretty sophisticated. I think what, and that's really the crux of it, is find out what this person can, how this person can be engaged. I used to do presentations to sales forces at TV stations, and I say, guys, you got to quit making commercials the same way you've been making them. It just becomes clutter. You know, all you're doing is giving a person an excuse to get up and go to the fridge and get something else, or go to the bathroom, do whatever. But I said, when was the last time, and this is years ago, when was the last time any one of you guys fast forward or left the TV when an E-Trade baby spot came on? You know?
Yes.
I mean, yeah. E-Trade got its message out, and in those days that was kind of the way you did it, in a clever way. And it was clever, and it was, and E-Trade got their brand out there. And I said, you've got to start finding ways to engage with these commercials. Let's just put a billboard up and flash it at you. And then of course, now we worry about, okay, am I sending out too many emails? Am I sending out too many Twitters or Instagrams and all of that? I mean, you worry about that fine line between becoming annoying versus informative.
Well, you know, the other part of that, Mark, is after, you know, when those E-Trade commercials would run, the next morning, everybody would be standing around the coffee machine talking about it. And like back in the day, you know, when TV shows, you know, 90 million people would watch the same TV show.
Yeah.
Today, a show is considered a hit if 4 million people watch it. And because across the board, between regular TV, cable TV, and all of these other Hulu, Amazon Prime, Netflix, nobody is watching the same thing. So you're never, ever, I don't think ever again going to get those audiences of 60 million, 100 million, or whatever. I mean, the final episode of MASH had like over 100 million people watching it.
Right.
Today, a final episode of something, you'll be lucky to get 6 million. You know, so it's so fractured. It's so fractured now.
Well, that's why we work, you know, at Fox, we constantly work trying to push for, you know, Live Plus 7 so we could get the 7-day aggregate of all that viewing and then put a rating to it, you know, because it's amazing how shows would jump in their ratings 50, 75% when you did a Live Plus 3 or Live Plus 7, not just the initial airing, but the on-demand viewing and, you know, all the other sources where they got it if it was measured. And it was amazing how much that number, that rating that you're talking about, would pop as a result of that.
Yeah.
I think to Eric's point, you know, in his business, it's all about when you find that ad agency or you find that graphic designer who can create a flyer for you or an ad for you that's compelling. I mean, boy, you got to latch onto those guys. And ride them for all they're worth, because they those are the guys, man, and they're just unbelievably creative. I have a new graphic designer who I hand her something. I don't even want to give her any ideas. I don't want her to be cluttered by any idea I have. I just want to give her a tone and say, here, go for it, because she's just wonderful. And I'm telling you, as many ad agencies and as many graphic designers are out there, you're really a handful that are the geniuses at it and get it. You know?
Yeah. Well, and the thing that's been very interesting over the course of my career is that, you know, we made spots and we made billboards and such, but frankly now most of the companies, and we work with big organizations and small organizations, and pretty much everybody now wants this digital approach. And the reason is that it's highly targeted. You only spend reaching the people you want to reach. And in many cases, you only pay if they open it and watch the video or they engage in the piece of content in some useful fashion. So now instead of just spraying and praying someone's going to watch it and you're going to get some small subset that might be interested in it, now you can target people and actually find the efficacy of your content. And then the thing that's become an amazing thing in L.A. is thousands of people have moved to L.A. to become YouTube stars and create content, and that's morphed into people being creators for Snapchat, creators for Facebook, and they're basically making short-form video, oftentimes sponsored by brands. But what happens is that the fans of those stars – are so compelling and so entertaining that the fans don't mind them picking up a drink or talking about their favorite cell phone, even if it's sponsored, because the content is compelling enough, it's relevant enough, and it's targeted at the audience they appeal to. And so you have the Danny Duncans and such that have millions of followers that you know, basically that's what teenagers are consuming and you know, Gen Z are consuming, and people are loyal to those celebrities, their internet celebrities, much more than they could care less about a movie star or a TV show star. And now brands are all clamoring to go and work with those kinds of people because they're more persuasive and they feel they're more authentic than interrupting people with a TV spot.
You know, Eric, you are absolutely right. You are absolutely right. I have friends staying with me this weekend, and one of them is a 25, 26-year-old. And last night, literally, everything from ordering dinner and other things, she did everything on her phone. She was on her phone the whole time trying to figure out where they wanted to get coffee the next morning and everything. But here's the thing. We were talking about blogs that we follow, and there is one particular fashion blog that I follow, and it's, you know, on my favorites, and every morning I take a look at what she's wearing and what she has to say. And you're right about the authenticity. You know, she's just a regular woman. She's not a supermodel, she's not an actress, she has her own style, and I go to her every day to get ideas, and when I see something I like and I click on it, it is always sold out.
Yeah.
If she's wearing a blouse or shoes or a bag or the lipstick she's wearing, you know, and at least once or twice a week I click onto something just to see the price, and 9.5 times out of 10 it is sold out. So those influencers, they're huge. They're huge.
Yeah. Now, see,
well,
I need a blogger who's just thrown on a pair of jeans, a T-shirt, and running out the door. That's all.
Well, what's interesting now is that these you're kind of getting back to the way it was before there was mass media. If you thought about it, the people you trust most are the people you know, your friends, your family, and it's called word-of-mouth marketing. And every study I've ever seen said the number one thing that influences purchase is word-of-mouth marketing from people you know and trust. What's happened in the last two decades is that these internet people on the internet that are normal people, but tend to be charismatic, interesting, attractive, whatever, they have now got an audience, and they're about as close as you get to having a friend tell you this is a good product. And people have this comfort and familiarity because they see them on video every day talking about whatever it is they talk about. And you feel this trust in this that you never get from interruptive advertising where it's quite clear that some celebrity is being paid to stand in front of a car or whatever. So it's a really interesting time where people don't trust public institutions the way they once did. They don't trust big companies, but they trust these people that are influencers that are talking about the things that they're expert at or they're passionate about, and it's persuading huge shifts in market share as companies and smart people are figuring out how to go and kind of work with these folks in an authentic way. Because here's the deal, if some influencer goes and talks about something and it doesn't sound like they really like it, they're just shilling for the company, the audience can tell. They shouldn't take that project.
Oh, yeah.
And just yeah. just like I wouldn't go tell my friend to go buy a car if I didn't like my car. I wouldn't do that, and because I would lose credibility with that person. And so we're seeing a huge shift in the way we think about marketing and branding and how we make purchase decisions. We're relying much more on the crowd. You know, I oftentimes if I'm out of town, I wouldn't go to a restaurant unless Yelp says it's good, because that's essentially the crowd. I don't go to movies unless Rotten Tomatoes scores it above an 85. I just figure it's probably a bad movie. All of us are now, because we have the crowd in our pocket with our smartphones, we can look at this technology and we can find out what everyone's thinking, and you can go, well, if everyone says this is a good drink, then maybe I'll try it. If this is a good bar, I'll go try it. If this is a good car, maybe I should go buy it. And that's changing the way people behave. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, yep. this fashion blogger that I follow, it's amazing. Every fashion company wants to partner with her. I mean, she partners with everybody from Old Navy to Chanel, you know,
yeah.
and everybody wants a piece of her because people buy what she puts out there. And you know, I see it across the board. It's not just fashion. And it's a real change.
Yeah, it is. So anyway, getting kind of back to how this ties into L.A. and El Segundo, what's going on in the South Bay, what's interesting is that people have always looked to California for the trend, always looked to L.A. for the trends, and so all these people have gravitated to come here, many of them hoping they're ultimately going to get a show on Comedy Central, but they're out there making this content on a regular basis, and they are getting to be famous, and it at all different levels, you know, maybe it's 5,000 people, maybe it's 5 million people. And it's become a whole shift in the way people think about marketing instead of interrupting people on broadcast television. So I think it's an exciting time. Many of those people live in among us. They're our neighbors and friends, and they're doing it sometimes just for fun. And then some of them are blowing up and being like your friend who's the fashion blogger.
Right, like the mom down the street who all of a sudden decided to do a mommy and me thing and start posting. All of a sudden, boom, she's got 5 million followers and she's this huge internet sensation. And she was just, a neighbor down the street or something. But so listen, all of this, the evolution, all of this evolution goes in turn. We also begin to talk about lifestyles, and we talk about. Working in the office and working 4 day weeks with 12-hour days versus a 5 day week with 8-hour days. And there's all kinds of shifts in working out of the house, letting people work out of the house versus working in an office. And that's led us to something that you created, which were you the chicken or the egg? Was WeWorks first, or were you first?
Here's what I'd say. WeWork got famous doing this. I'll start back with, people have been coming into office buildings to do kind of white-collar work for obviously decades and decades and decades. But what has happened is that a couple interesting entrepreneurs, well before WeWork, started to go and lease out space on shorter time increments with no big deposit, no big build-out. Right. And it's been going on for a long time. What happened was in the last decade, this phenomenon has gotten cooler and more interesting because people have gone and designed spaces that are much more compelling and comfortable and oftentimes have some of the attributes of home or attributes of a bar that are much more interesting and inviting places than just cubicle land or offices with glass everywhere. And so what's happened is the people have gone and kind of professionalized that as a business model and has moved from being, I'm going to lease you some square footage to I'm going to offer you co-working space as a essentially office hospitality model, because it has some of the aspects of office space, because there's physical space and desks and chairs and phones and conference rooms, but it also has some aspect, which is companies like ours and at El Camp and El Segundo, we go and we actually provide other services. So we do breakfast every Tuesday, we sort the mail, we'll take your packages, we kind of act as part of your staff, And people really like that because oftentimes they don't need a full-time receptionist if they're a small business. Sometimes they don't want to worry about the hassles of you know, making sure the internet service is always working and that the phone lines work and all of the functional things of an office. And so what's happened over the last 10 years is a bunch of companies have gone and created really interesting spaces. And WeWork has certainly become the most dominant. They've got a market cap of $20 billion and like 300 locations around the world. And they have created a high level of awareness of that, their brand. But it's kind of brought more and more people to be open to considering co-working as an alternative to leasing traditional space.
Well, I've always said if we were to lose our lease or lose our handshake with the city, as a chamber of commerce, I would definitely consider moving into a situation like that because, first of all, it sort of fits with our mission. You know, you've got a variety of businesses there. We get to kind of have a grassroots survey on what people are looking for, what they need as a business, what you know, what they'd like to see as a resource from a business like ours, a chamber of commerce, because we don't want to be our parents' chamber of commerce. We want to be a real resource. I mean, when I first came in, I thought, gosh, if I could just change the name. But, you know, it's still an institution and has been around since, you know, 1925 in Manhattan Beach. So it's still a history. So what we got to do is change the perception. And so that's the same thing. You know, we're evolving that. Shared workspace. My youngest son is at University of Oregon, and there is a building there. You know, the dorms that we went to were four walls, right? Basically, and you had an RA that you tried to be sneaky around, and sometimes you got him on your side, and other times, you know, he was a pain in the ass. But and that was your dorm life, right? And also back when I went to school, because I'm an older guy, you know, having a co-ed dorm was considered pretty innovative. And I wasn't in that. I was in the dorm where they kept the animals, which was the athletes. But this dorm in Oregon, I mean, they have a building there that, and it's a company that now goes to towns all around, university towns all around the country. I think there's six or seven of them now, but they literally, it's a lifestyle dorm. I mean, they've got a pool on the roof. They've got ping pong tables. They've got a little restaurant.
Nope.
They've got,
nope.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. And one of the things that my son was telling me, he doesn't live there, but and it's affordable, but he doesn't live there. But he said, yeah, but the thing, Dad, with those guys, they never want to leave. You know, they just want to stay in their little bubble and they don't go anywhere because everything is there for them. Their life is right there. And, you know, and it's co-ed and all of that. I don't
one of the things
name
I'm
of
looking
it,
at your website, I'm looking at your website, Eric, lcampusa.com, because we're all about what's going on here in the South Bay, lcampusa.com. And I love, I want to find out from you how this came about, nights and weekends, for $150 bucks a month. That is so perfect for the guy who hates his job, who wants to do the thing on the side, but he needs to go someplace because his wife and his kids don't want him doing it at home or he can't do it at home. Nights and weekends, $150 bucks a month.
Jeez, what are
brilliant.
You talking about? Joe?
Yeah. So one of the things
Mark, go home.
So one of the things we found is that there's the world of work is changing, and lots of people have a side gig, they have a passion project, they have something else they're working on, or frankly, they might work downtown, and they might make this their Friday office, even if they're paying for space in another location. They just don't want to drive that far. So we have a really interesting group of people that have working in among us that have got very non-conventional work habits oftentimes because they may have a regular 9-to-5 job, but they're working on their screenplay or they're working on making a film or they're working on some other startup business that just they can't do at home at their kitchen table. And there is something about being out of your home away from your refrigerator and your TV, distracting you, your dog or your cat or your kids or whatever, to be in a place where it's clearly a professional environment. You're there to do work. You're going to focus. You're going to sit down with your laptop and crank things out. And so we have all sorts of interesting folks come in, and I'm here often, and I get to meet most of them. And we've got folks coming in on the weekends that are teaching computer coding class in our conference rooms, as an example. And so we've welcomed in lots of different kinds of people. In general, our space, because we designed it to be fairly creative looking, it attracts creative kind of businesses, although we're not exclusive to that.
Yeah.
But we've got all sorts of interesting companies that are kind of creating whatever is the future, and they're doing it in a creative space where they feel more relaxed than in a traditional office building that kind of is cubed out and very conventional.
Right.
Well, I think
you've taken professional amenity. Mark, I want to focus on his business. I want to focus on Eric's opportunities. And the one thing I want to focus on is this production studio. Tell me about that, because I want to do a YouTube channel video thing, and I want to get famous.
it's so easy. Here's one of the things we found. Again, my day job is we help brands get visibility. And when we designed the space, we said we better have some facilities so we can quickly and inexpensively shoot things. And now it used to be you had to go and rent a big studio over at a lot, and it was a big deal. Nowadays, you can do it with inexpensive cameras, do some quick backdrops, and then we shoot a lot of things here on a regular basis in our studio, and then we have an editing bay, and we can bang out an edit, and then we can put it online. So a lot of the trappings that we used to have to do take a long time, and now we can do things almost overnight. And the beauty of that is that a lot of brands want to perpetually be creating content because they want to be out there in the social space. They're not waiting around to air it on television. They're just constantly putting things out. So we work with, for instance, a number of beverage brands where they are constantly wanting to go and put different pieces of content in different places with different people, and it might be just product shots, or it might be people talking about the product, and we can do that in a very inexpensive fashion, because the days of $400,000 TV commercials or $1 million TV commercials is on the wane, and people are saying, for $400,000, I want 400 pieces of content, and you've got to have an inexpensive way to produce that.
Well, I think
it's beautiful.
The unique aspect of El Camp is just there is no issue or no situation that is not appealing to anyone. I mean, you want some. I said it in when I promoted you a little bit in our newsletter, this last newsletter from the Chamber. And one of the things I said, listen, if you just want to come and sit on the couch in front of their huge big screen television for $25 a day, I'm sure you could work something out. I mean, from a law firm coming in there, a law firm that's maybe a local law firm that has its good years and bad years. And the cool thing about that is they don't have to go lease an office space and sign a 5-year lease or a 10-year lease or anything like that.
Yeah.
They can go, okay, we're doing really great, so we can expand this year. Let's go talk to Eric and get a couple more spaces. Oh, we're not doing so well this year. We're going to have to downsize a little bit and, let's reduce a couple of spaces. But you can do that stuff on the fly and not be hemmed in by contracts that are onerous or can almost sink you sometimes because you got into a situation.
Yeah, that's right.
And then there's interesting things. I mean, I don't know if they're gimmicks or what, but I was walking past a desk and I go, holy cow. And it was a standing desk, and it had a treadmill.
Yeah.
At the desk.
Yes.
Yes. I mean.
Yes.
All right. So now I actually don't know how you use a treadmill and work at a desk at the same time, but it was. I mean, it's something for everybody.
It's
fantastic.
I'll speak to that. We have a treadmill desk, which basically we walk up there, you put your laptop on it, and it's designed to go very slowly. You're not running on it. And what the science behind it is that if you just constantly are moving a little bit, which is what we were built to do as humans thousands of years ago, that actually you burn more calories, you think better, you think clearer, and you're happier.
Right.
And so we've got a number of little things like that that just make it non-conventional and interesting. And my belief is that the days of either sitting at your desk or sitting in a conference room are not the way the future of work should be, and that you want to be able to go, you may want to go sit on a couch and get a different frame of mind. I may want to sit outside and enjoy some fresh air. We've got a room in the back that's got a big massage chair, and if you need a 15-minute massage to work the kinks out of your neck, you can do that and then go back and be refreshed and ready to go and make great work. And so my belief is that having lots of interesting nooks and crannies and places where people can go, just a change in location within an office space can bring a new perspective, maybe hit a new idea that's going to get you over whatever problem you have in front of you.
I think the psychographic of people who are using your space is exciting too. When you think about the reason I would love to be there as a chamber is because, first of all, if I all of a sudden I need a graphic designer, or I need a printer, or I need whatever it is, a specialty that I need, there's probably someone there who does that.
Yeah.
And
well,
they're probably very good because the psychographic, I mean, they're innovative, just the fact that they're not with some big corporate group, that they're in this area, and that just means they have this bohemian sort of tone that I'm looking for, you know, to be engaging, to be exciting.
Well, you're hitting on a really interesting point, which we believe that you know, it used to be that people would strive to go to college, strive to get a job at a big company and work at that company for 50 years. In LA, we have the largest percentage of people that don't want full-time jobs or want to work for smaller organizations so they can have greater flexibility. And LA kind of pioneered the idea of people coming together, producing something and dissipating. That's how films were made. That's how television was made. That's how video games are made. And what's interesting now is places like ours have lots of companies that are kind of in and around that space and will come together and collaborate on projects, and then we won't. And we'll work out the economics on a project-by-project basis. The power of that is that you can plug the right people in at the right time and you're not having the carrying cost of those people. And we all know that collaboration creates the best ideas. It's not one person sitting in a room. It's a bunch of interesting people with different perspectives solving problems. And when they're in a creative environment and they're all attracted and they have like-mindedness to them, you're much more likely to have breakthrough ideas to solve whatever the biggest issues you're facing. And one of the things I found when I'm originally from the Detroit area and I came to LA, what's amazing of here is that many of the people I know don't want to work in a conventional business structure. They are freelancers or they run very small businesses, and they love the freedom of being an entrepreneur, whereas like where I'm from in the Midwest, it was like, you don't have a full-time job or you don't work for General Motors? What's wrong with you? And LA is actually the opposite. It's like, wait a minute, why would you want to go work for a big company when you're a knowledge worker and you can get more, you know, more bang for your buck selling your time a la carte to different organizations and plugging into different types of business models? And so, you know, I think that this co-working kind of business helps facilitate those kinds of conversations, those kinds of businesses that otherwise couldn't operate in the old way.
The other thing I like about your space is, and maybe this is just me, I'm an older guy, maybe that's it, but I think another thing that's important for these spaces and is environment. And I mean, walking into your, it's almost like your walk-up appeal is off the hook. I mean, it's fantastic.
Thank you.
I mean, it is. I mean, you guys literally, Joe, Jackie, you got to go over and see El Camp. And El Segundo.
I think Jackie and I need to produce some videos there.
We'd love to have you in there.
You will walk in there and you will go, holy cow, we've got to work out of here. You know, I mean, it's just as fantastic, and it can be as you can be as isolated or not isolated as you want, and yet you still feel like you're in a gregarious sharing environment, like Eric was saying, where you can build relationships in the coffee bar. You know, or the coffee at the breakfast table where you're not going to build that if you're in a corporate world and you've got to drive across town to visit another corporate world, and it just doesn't happen. Where here, this interaction happens. I tell you, I just think it's the greatest thing in the world.
Well, I'll add, thank
really
you.
Cool.
I, I'd add another interesting thing, which is this, you know, some people are still just getting familiar with co-working, but it's been around for a while. And the way we see it is there's something for everybody. It's kind of like hotel chains. You can stay at a Red mm-hmm. Roof or you can stay at a Four Seasons, and there's something for everybody. And the interior design of the hotel. The interior design's different. The tone is different. You know, it's a whole different energy. And we're not for everybody. We acknowledge that. But WeWork's got a great space down the street. It's lovely. And for certain kinds of people, it's perfect for them. There's a cross campus just opened up down the road. Lovely place. It's for different, you know, a different audience. And for our audience, it's generally people that want to work in a more open space with high ceilings. And but there are some people that have to have a little glass box to work in, and that's their thing. And I'm mm-hmm. like, that's cool. That's not what we do. We're more kind of a more open, an open space. And some people can't concentrate, quite frankly. They have to have their own little isolated space. I'm
but
like, more power to you.
But I bet you, Eric, I came in there and I said, you know what, Eric, I need a glass box built here. I still want the gregarious.
I need a glass box
built
around me.
Yeah, I'm going to all glass around me. But no, but that's what's kind of cool is you have the freedom to create like that. And that just makes the space even look more eclectic, more cool when you have those little areas like that, you know? It's like a cone of silence.
No.
You know, I want my cone of silence,
no,
still,
Mark,
but I still want to walk out here and meet everybody. You know,
now, Mark,
I think it's
what
fun.
I'd like to do now is I'd like to get a little chapter and verse from Eric on the prices and how people can get involved. So, Eric, I'm going to let you
yeah.
talk
sure.
and give us a little chapter and verse on prices, plans, and so forth.
Sure. Yeah. So the base level, you can come in and do nights and weekends, as you said, for like $150, very reasonable. If you want a full-time desk, it's about $600 a month. And then if you need an office,
jeez.
It's between $1,500 and $2,500 roughly. And then we also rent out conference rooms for people that just need. So a lot, because we're relatively close to LAX, we actually have a lot of groups that come in that are meeting in the toy industry or aerospace industry, and they'll come over and rent a conference room for about $85 an hour. And then we also have groups that come and like literally rent out our lobby and do big events. And so we welcome groups. In fact, we've been doing a bunch of interesting things in and around the film industry and the commercial industry. We've had an Audi shot a commercial here. Microsoft shot a commercial here. We did a couple scenes for the show Silicon Valley on HBO.
Wow.
and for a show called Here and Now that's new on HBO. So what's interesting is because we're kind of a creative space, people don't mind having a little interruption from interesting things to be around. So like the couple weeks ago when the cast of Silicon Valley were here, it was kind of a real treat because I love that show, and they're really – it's a funny, interesting show. And again, we're kind of in a tech world. It's so cool to have kind of the poster boy show for the world
yeah.
of Silicon Valley being shot in your own office
yeah.
space. But we got a kick out of it.
Yeah.
So that, I think people, if you want to be in a high rise, go to Century City and again, be in an office tower and be by yourself. But if you're open to kind of having other stimuli, these kinds of spaces uniquely can do the kinds of things that we're doing here.
No,
and
I would ask you about free happy hour on Thursday. What's that about?
Well, you know, we don't want to make it obligatory to go and socialize with folks. So we do a couple things a week that are fun, and we happen to have happy hour at 5 o'clock every Thursday. So anyone who's listening, you're welcome to come by and meet us and get a tour and hear what we're up to. And it's fun. It's not like an over the top drinking fest. It's just kind of a light way to finish a day before the weekend. And we find people really like that.
What is free?
Free me.
It's
free rare
if you're
days.
Ready face
can
there,
I can
Joe,
I come over and get a free
face.
Drink? Is am I speaking
yes, of
Greek?
Course.
Can I come over and get a free
yeah.
drink?
You can.
As
you're
as
welcome.
You
want
that com- oh my
no,
God.
No, you know what?
But you can't
be
pay. Hey, Joe, and he Eric what? Is not taking what? Cryptocurrency as payment. I don't think so.
We are not.
All right, boys. All right, boys.
You know what,
all right,
can
boys.
Can I mention one
boys,
other thing that appeals to me? Wait. You know, one other thing that appeals to me about Eric's space, and sorry to jump in here, But I'm a grassroots research guy. I want to know what my neighbors think. I want to know what our members mm-hmm. think. You know, you can go to SurveyMonkey and you can send out all that stuff. But what I love about a shared workspace, too, is if I want to find out, like, say I want to put up, well, I am. I'm putting on a home and health expo in June, right? I can go with mm-hmm. people there and say, what do you guys think about a home and health expo? You know, I can talk to anybody
oh, yeah.
there who's kind of in that world and say, what do you think? And get their honest opinion on it. And, you know, there you go. You've got this
yeah.
resource
Great.
All around
well,
you to do this grassroots research.
All right, boys, we got to wrap this up. We got to wrap this up.
Yeah.
We got to wrap this up. So, Eric, quickly give us contact, website information, phone numbers where
yeah.
people can reach you either at Ignited or LCAMP.
Yes. So you want to reach LCAMP, it's LCAMP, ELCAMPUSA.com. Phone number is 310-773-3100. And I would love to hear from you. We are at 2150 Park Place, Suite 100, right over next to the Bay Club. So please come by if you're working out or just want to check us out in the neighborhood. There's a lovely driveway. You can park in temporarily and just come in and get a quick tour.
LCAMPUSA.com, LCAMPUSA.com, LCAMPUSA.com.
Thank you.
So,
oh, you're
and I got to tell you, go to the website, but Jackie, Joe, you guys have got to go over there. I mean, I've been to, and they're clients,
yeah.
I mean, they're members, but this place, it's walk-up appeal. I mean, and it's so built for television, too, because it's high ceilings and open space, and I guarantee you, you'll run into somebody you know, probably. I ran into Whitney Stevenson, who was a neighbor, and just... You know.
Well, as you know, Mark, Dennis and I have been using the WeWork
right.
space in Manhattan Towers, and that's been fabulous. But I like the space that Eric has even better, and I love the amenities, I think, even better. I think they really designed things really well. And this concept of a production studio, Jackie, we got to check that out.
Full
we
service,
will check it out.
Service.
We will check it out. All right, let's wrap this up, everybody.
LCAMPUSA.com. LCAMPUSA.com.
Thank you, Eric. Thank
All
you,
right,
Eric
thanks,
Johnson, so much for joining us today. And, of course, thank you, Mark Lips. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Jackie.
Bye.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
Have a great weekend,
All right,
everybody.
That's our show, Take ladies it. And gentlemen. Have a great weekend. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
It's going to be a beautiful week next week. Southern California is back.